Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for August 13th, 2008. Hello. This is Jeff Green, editor-in-chief of the PC part of 1UP.com. And I'm here with the usual gaggle of morons and deadbeats.
And me.
And who are you?
Don't you know? This is Ryan
Scott. Is it going to be one of those podcasts?
It always is with Ryan.
Wow.
Just go with the program. Next to Ryan is...
Robert Ashley, Bobbito, Dr. Max Chill, various other nicknames.
Yeah, it's morphed yet again, right? So we had Bobbito became Judge Ito. And then you might be familiar
I never heard that.
I have.
There's a company called Itoan that makes green tea.
Yeah.
So then now it's Judge Itoan green tea.
Okay.
That's like the latest mutation. He's like the T virus. Like that shit just can't catch it.
Every time Sean calls me on the phone, he's calling me some new fucking nickname. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but Sean calls me on the phone and it's always like, Bobbito, Bobbito. It starts like going all this nonsense for like 2 minutes. It's a long greeting. It's like It's like the kind of greeting that people would have like when they used to sail the seas, you know, for days before they would get somewhere and they'd have this elaborate ceremony. It's sort of like that every time I'm on the phone.
Did you appreciate the raps last time about Yoda?
Yeah, I did.
Did you play him for your wife?
I didn't play him for Sarah, no.
Did you erase them or did you listen to them in their entirety?
I wish that they were on my phone. I'd play him right now. I wish I had a phone. Message from
Sean.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you should have saved him.
All right. I'll remember that next time.
And then I guess I introduce myself. This is Sean.
Right. And our special guest, which we thought we might have today, we didn't have. But we will have him soon. Also, we have there's some weird hand signals going on here.
Nothing. Just keep going. You don't see him. You don't know him.
Behind the scenes.
We don't have Chuff Love today either. So no right. Chuff.
We also wanted to get Rod Humble to join us, to rejoin us.
Right. He was a special guest.
Over this past weekend, I sort of like slapped myself in the head when I started, you know, I was looking at various writing about Braid. And I was listening to a lecture by Braid creator Jonathan Blow that he gave at the Develop Conference in Brighton, England. And he referenced an art game made by one Rod Humble. So like, oh, so is this the same guy? I looked it up. And of course, it seems that both Rod and Jonathan used to communicating with one another. They comment on one another's blogs. And so there was just this whole angle. I feel bad not doing any research because, you know, Rod came on and you know him more than I do. And you're like, you know, he's associated with The Sims and stuff. And I was like, let's just wing it there. But there's this whole other side of him and his career that we didn't even get to discuss. So we're trying to get him back on. It'd be a perfect opportunity to talk about, you know, a lot of the other things he's doing that are sort of like off the radar that aren't officially, you know, EA products.
That's right. Yeah, he has kind of a whole, you know, our games art thing going on that he explores, or how do you make them art and, you know, what counts as art. And EA kind of lets him just do this thing on his own. So he has a separate website where he's actually posted a couple games that I guess you checked out, right?
Yeah, I mean, this would be a good opportunity to start. I mean, because ultimately, we're going to talk about Braid. I know at least three of us here played it. And so one of the games is called The Marriage. And one of Rod's stated goals that I think he shares with Jonathan Blow is the notion that gameplay itself can communicate some sort of a message. Not message in the sense that it's didactic, like it's trying to teach you something. But I almost look at these kind of games that they call art games. They're more just like the equivalent of parables to me, insofar as that they're very, very compact, and they allow for, you know, a multitude of interpretations, and they make you think for a second, but it's like you don't spend the rest of your week thinking on it, you know? But they show potential, I think, of, like, things that can happen in games. So in The Marriage, in this case, it basically starts off, and the other aspect of this is that there's no external explanation to the game unless you go and seek it out, like, unless you go and look at Rod's notes on the game. Like, if you start it, it's basically... The game opens up. There's two boxes, a pink one and a blue one. They're moving across this field, and then there are these other black and other colored objects that start to appear in the field. You have no indications as to, like, control or anything. You just experiment and figure it out, find out what the rules of the game are. And in the process of figuring out the rules of the game, that's where it starts to impart some sort of meaning, or you assign some meaning to it. It's the interplay between, you know, the audience and the creator. And in this case... You have the hint that it's called marriage, and then you see here's a blue block, here's a pink block. Maybe this is the male and this is the female. And then what's their relationship and what happens? And you figure out that you're this force of attraction. The only thing you could do is scroll your mouse over things and cause them to move in different ways or to erase items and things like that. Either of you guys played it? Or no. Ryan?
I looked at it but didn't play it. I went to his site and peeked. That's about it.
Another example I tried is called The Passage by someone else. I don't have his name with me.
I played that. I forget that guy's name. He also did another game, another like super tiny pixel game that was about, you know, just a quick like storytelling experience. Mm-hmm. We should look that up.
Yeah. And in Passage, I mean, it's basically the passage of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's just this tiny bar that goes across the center of your monitor, and it's super pixelated. You have a recognizable character that you play. And at first, you're on the far left side of this like bar, and everything's laid out in front of you. And as you start walking, you're basically just going across this environment, and you're able to move, you know, north and south, mm-hmm. and you're basically moving across the world at the same time. And so you see that there are like various treasure chests and stuff down in the south, but then the terrain becomes more complicated and labyrinthine, and you can go through mazes and get chests. Later on, you find that there's like a female figure, and you can partner up with that person by touching them, or you can just keep on going and avoid it. And then what happens if you partner with that person? You have like an extended view of certain things, but that person is always like one step behind you. And then that means that you're now able, and you basically, when you're controlling it, it counts as a single unit. So you can't navigate some aspects of the maze in the ways that you could before, that you have to basically work with the two characters as your single character. And as you continue to move across the stage, you're getting older, and behind you, you're also moving toward the right side of the screen. And there's more of the game that's visible in retrospect than there is like a future ahead of you. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It's like, I'm going to see what you thought when you played it. I mean, it's kind of, I really played it like a parable. Play for 5 minutes, think about it. You're like, okay, I see what they're doing. You know, when you start off young, mm-hmm. you've got your future ahead of you, moves the other direction. When you have a partner, you gain something, but then at the risk of something, you know, you're not able to just take your own path through these various, you know, labyrinths and mazes to get these things.
So part of the talk that's going on with these games is that the kind of ongoing endless debate which goes back, which way precedes this art form, on the notion of, you know, if you go into it not knowing the theory or the idea, can you appreciate it? Can a layperson open up this game and get any enjoyment out of it or understand what it's even about if they weren't explained in advance what the artist was trying to do? I mean, did you get any sense playing either of these things?
It was
like,
very,
had you
yeah,
read about them before you played them?
And in the case of The Marriage, I had, so that wasn't a good read. But with The Passage, I hadn't. Nick Sutner just told me to try it, so I did, without any, you know, preconceptions or anything. It seemed, I mean, obviously everyone's going to have a slightly different reading. I mean, that's part of the point as well, you know.
It's pretty.
Open your soda, Jeff.
Okay. And I want to make a little clicky noise while you were being all smart sounding.
But I don't know. It's pretty out in the open. Passage. I mean, it's a weird game. It takes a little bit when you first open it if you've never heard of it, because at first you don't even know what you're looking at, because this guy, his games are made in like super super lo-fi 2D, so it's literally like 80 pixels by 80 pixels. You know, it's hard to even tell what you're looking at first, and what you can do in the world, and the other stuff sort of becomes apparent as you're going through. And it has music, and it's sort of like hinting at, you know, what you should be feeling in the music and stuff. So
yeah, they're like, I see like a lot of potential in these, but they just really remind me of exploratory sketches that an artist might undertake as they're working towards some larger project, getting someplace, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's basically how, you know, Rod and the people that are creating these view them as
right.
well.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's something about it too. It's like, you know, like when I'm playing even Marriage, you know, you basically just have these different shaped colors, and you're basically writing a metaphor on top of moving blocks and re-seeing them as a relationship, you know. And it kind of reminds me in a way of like, you familiar with paintings of Mark Rothko? Just big, giant, enormous paintings of just color fields. Sometimes they'll have vibrating, what is it called? Complementary colors.
To where they really stand out against each other and stuff.
And sometimes what happens, like if you put like a really sharp blue against a really sharp, or a red and a green and a blue and against a yellow or something, that their border will start to actually vibrate. It creates the illusion of vibration or something. But anyway, in these paintings, people profess to stand in front of them and break down in tears and all this sort of thing. And I look at them and it's like, it's kind of a neat formal, from a formal point of view, it's neat.
Yeah.
But well, the, it's like, well, the Borg, it never made me cry.
The Borg can't appreciate art.
The Borg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're the Borg, dude.
I'm part of the Borg. Why can't, I be like Data or Star Trek?
I don't know. Everyone reacts differently to things. I usually
cried when I see paintings.
When you see Mark Rothko's?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever been emotionally affected by a painting, period.
By anyone?
Yeah. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like a music person.
What's really fun is to go to museums and get angry at paintings.
Yeah.
There's always that person that's in
Fuck
there.
Fuck you!
There's like, or no, the usual one, like, my fucking kid could have done that.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's in every art museum, Museum of Modern Art in the country.
There was that documentary that came out a little while ago about this prodigy, some little kid prodigy. Somebody listening is going to know what I'm talking about. I can't remember the name of it.
Make a documentary about it's a little girl, right?
Right.
And it's like, the documentary is called, like, My Kid Could Paint This. Yeah.
And it's about that this kid was touted as being this genius artist, and other people were saying, yeah, this is like, you know, little kid watercolor doodles or whatever. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just goes to show, like, how much the, you know, someone's reaction to something is important, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the handshake of the deal that art makes, you know.
There's
you
also can, promotion,
you can spend
too.
All your time, like, making a painting or music or whatever, but unless somebody decides to come along and give themselves to it, then it's, you know, it's nothing. So
I think there's, like, I mean, there's the interpretational flexibility, but there's also just, like, the way that things are promoted. Like, it sounds like in this movie, like, this girl basically had the equivalent of an agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like someone just walks into a random kindergarten and says, that's not it, hey, you kid, come with me. Like, I mean, someone's actively promoting. And you look at it now, it's even more obvious than ever in the internet era, where it's like people, like, the cover, the woman on the cover of the most recent issue of Wired magazine,
mm-hmm,
is basically someone who just made herself famous by telling people she's famous. So, but I mean, this is a lot like, too. I mean, I think even podcasting is like, you know, we noticed this when we first started writing a magazine and started podcasting. It's like, we get so much more attention just by telling people they should pay attention to us on the podcast. And I just think that, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, how about when we went to the Metreon, a local place in San Francisco, yesterday, and we walked by those art people. Like, have you guys do you remember this? Were you
Yeah, they had a big empty picture frame thing,
right?
And the dude voguing inside of it,
and there was a Volkswagen, like, on this is right in front of the MoMA, the Modern Art Museum in San Francisco, and right, you know, off the sidewalk, there's a old Volkswagen that's up on display there, which somehow is some kind of artistic statement.
Mm-hmm.
Expressing some kind of theory. But then in front of that, there were some people holding an empty picture frame, and then, yeah, people sticking their heads inside of it and other people taking pictures of them.
But I think because they had that part of the group was there to act as a spectator, that encouraged other people to stop and see what was going on. So, like, we couldn't get by the sidewalk because there was a bunch of people looking.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I mean, this is more the audience thing. It's like, that's another way of indicating if something's worth your attention. Like, if you go walking through the art museum again, you see people just standing for half an hour in front of a painting, and mm-hmm, you look at it and you're like, I don't know, I just feel like I digested that in like 5 seconds. Why do I need to stand there? But people might feel compelled to. And then another thing, too, it's been proven, like, you just go and you have people form a line. You have like three or five people in the street form a line, and next thing you know, you got like 40 people behind them,
right,
even though no one can answer what they're in line for.
Right. Well, I mean, I do think people need context. I mean, we'd like to think that, like, we're all smart enough to know what's genius and what we should pay attention to and what we shouldn't. But, I mean, over and over again, you know, we prove that wrong. I mean, the Washington Post did that story last year that won them a Pulitzer, where they took this violin virtuoso who was in town in D.C. to play the Kennedy Center. He was, you know, known all over the world, and people in his both, you know, both nights in D.C. were sold out, and everyone wanted to come see him play. They took him down to the Metro station in downtown and had him play, and people just passed right by. They videotaped it. You know, he's down
That's
there for an hour,
hysterical.
And people just walked right by because, you know, they need for it to be in the concert hall.
Their perception was this was some deadbeat street busker.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's all just because, you know, it's not art until, you know, you stop and declare it to be and give it your attention. I mean,
and like, the context, though, there, because, I mean, we have some really talented musicians that play in the BART stations here. Like, there's the what does he play? This is how much attention I pay to him. I think, is this like a saxophone? He
plays the guy down here at the...
Yeah, right in our station. He's almost there every morning.
He plays the sax.
And I think he's very talented. But as you're passing through there, you're on your way to, you're in transit and you're usually in a hurry. I'm trying to get so I can grab a bagel and then get up to the office so I'm not the latest one in, you know? And it's like the difference of like if you went to sit down to a performance, you're like, okay, I'm going with the expectation that I'm going to sit and pay attention to this. But like,
yeah.
When I was in high school and I was in the in jazz band, me and two other guys, all three of us were Jewish. This one Saturday, we went and we took some of the band instruments that we don't play, like, but we all played horn, so you know the mouthpiece is kind of similar. But we took like a tuba and a trombone and I forget what else, and you know we were trumpet players. We went down to the local mall, and as a joke, we just started playing Christmas carols, and badly, you know, because we didn't really know how to play these instruments. And, you know, we were Jewish. It was just sort of a joke. We decided, let's do this. And people started giving us money. And we hadn't put money. We hadn't put a thing out, a hat. People were just, like, throwing money
at your feet.
Yeah. So then we just realized, man, if we just, like, put a hat out or something, like, we can make some money. And we did.
Just have your practice sessions out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Learn, go through your scales.
Was it even during Christmas time?
No. Yes, it was during Christmas time. So, yeah.
Because that would be kind of weird.
Yeah. Then we pushed our luck because then we went back to school, and one of us had so much fun playing the tuba that we went and found a couple more tubas on the day that the music instructor was sick. You know, so it was a substitute music teacher, which is just like, you know, music class is already kind of a zoo. So this was substitute, so everybody's fucking around. So the three of us were all playing tubas the whole day, and the whole band was cracking up because we were terrible and just we were making up oompa parts to stuff. And the teacher came back, the actual teacher came back the next day, and he was in front of the class, and he said, well, I got a really good report from the substitute that you guys were all very well-behaved, and especially well-behaved was the tuba section.
Wow. Anyway. Back to
I don't know why I told that story. No. Where am I?
Go back to art games and work our way to Braid from there.
No, I mean, not art games, but just like we were talking about, you know, games that try to tell story through gameplay. That's not exactly, you know, a property exclusively owned by small-time indie developers. People are doing that all the time now. I mean, you look at, like, I mean, we talked about this as being a real detracting moment in Metal Gear Solid 4, but they were definitely going for it when, you know, spoiler alert, Old Snake is crawling through the radiated chamber, and all of his suit is coming apart, and he's, you know, dying and grasping. And you're mashing the button. I mean, they're definitely going for something like that.
Yeah, we should differentiate. Like, when you say art games, this is what the people that are creating them are calling them, and the difference is that I think they're probably just a little more ostentatious about this fact that's their sole reason to exist, whereas with, like, Metal Gear, it's incorporating that into it, and sometimes naturally, sometimes not so, but it's also doing all these other things and trying to make, like, basically just something that can entertain anyone that can play it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if, and like, all these guys are, you know, going around saying, I make art games. I mean, I think it's a lot of the reaction from the public. I think people are saying, I make indie games. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if everyone is really, like, putting on the beret.
Case of, like, what Rod is doing here, this was like, I'm going to demonstrate a theory to you.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He was consciously doing it.
Yeah.
Another
moment in a recent game, God of War, Chains of Olympus, if you get to the end of it, spoiler alert, there's that moment where you get to the underworld, and you're there with your daughter, you know, this moment in the series that Kratos has been wanting to get back his family, and the daughter is grasping onto his leg, and you have to push your daughter off so you can go kill some dude. Mm-hmm. And it's really mean. It's like your daughter's like, Daddy, no, and you have to, you know, basically kick your daughter off and leave her behind forever. And, you know, that's a similar kind of...
Right, but there's a difference there in that, like, I mean, that's almost like mimesis, where it's trying to copy, where the physical action is trying to imitate it through the mode of interaction, whereas in the case of marriage, what it's trying to do is that every bit of meaning that can be obtained from the experience of playing the game is entirely contained in just the interactive aspect of it. There's no one screaming. There's no recognizable, like, daughter saying that she loves you, you know. Yeah. You know, I mean, but it's similar. And dude, there's been so many cases of, too. I mean, you know, Psychonauts has levels that are basically the act of playing the level is how you understand a character.
Yeah.
I mean, the level itself is a character. Other sort of mergers of form and content, like in Spore coming up. I mean, you get this game about evolution, and at the same time, it works as, like, a... another version of the evolution of game design, you know, simplicity.
But
Braid
is totally not independent of, you know, other things. It's not entirely told in
Braid is many, many steps like away from marriage and
And it's sort of weird, actually. I mean, because sometimes, I mean, you sort of writing about, you know, feeling that the gameplay was disconnected somehow from the story that it was trying to tell.
I've come to think with, like, a different... See, my thing I have to get out there is I haven't finished the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you have.
Yes.
So that way, because now I've got, like, all these ideas, because I've sort of been following it. I got to the point where I just was like, I like this and I appreciate it, but the act of actually playing it, I wasn't really that engrossed in it to the point where I wanted to continue. And then there's other things, too. Some of it's just been time. Things have come up, and I've, like, you know, we went out one night, and...
I actually was, like, super compelled by the game. I mean, like, when I first started playing it for, like, the first hour, I wasn't sure about it. Like, the puzzles didn't really click with me or anything. And then when I went back the next day, I ended up playing, like, for 5 hours and beating the game. And then I went back and played through it again because I'm a nerd. And I just really enjoyed it on a strictly, like, a puzzle adventure game kind of level. Although I also... like, after playing through it twice, became sort of enamored with trying to figure out what the fuck was going on with the story and obsessing about that and reading message board posts with all the other people, you know, trying to figure out what was going on and all the weird theories cropping up with people, you know, describing, like, the nautical flags that pop up at the end of the level and, you know, making all these theories about the sort of weird nuclear weapons references and stuff that pop up toward the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's a very good, even on a cynical. I don't think that it was like calculation on Blow's part, but I think it's a good time to get away with this sort of thing. I mean, I don't know how many people have actually downloaded the game now, but I mean, with like the popularity of shows and, like Lost and stuff, people love to basically like just the cryptomania. You know, they love like just that this element of things, and so I mean the nautical flags and all that. I mean, it's just feeding into the same part that like makes Ryan speculate that it was the dog that was the ghost in the cabin and Lost.
That's the most frustrating thing to me, though, is like you playing the game, like the, you know, it's a game where every puzzle has a solution, and the solution is really clean, you know, like everything makes a lot of sense to me, and I found that aspect of it really satisfying. Even I had two puzzles that I had to cheat on, and even those, when I figured them out, I was like, oh, motherfucker, you know.
Yeah, I haven't cheated yet, but I definitely feel the need to, because I feel too dumb for that game.
But I haven't put in enough hours yet. I mean, I hear the same thing that you said, that at some point it clicks.
Yeah.
And it does not click for me yet, which may mean I'm just too stupid for the game, or I just haven't spent enough time with it.
I don't know.
There's puzzle pieces I'm looking at that I'm just like, I just don't see it at all.
Yeah.
I think there's a potential reading that I have that makes sense for that to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should just throw it out there, and then you can tell me what sense it makes to you having actually played it. In this case, like when I say I haven't finished it, I have looked at the video of the final level, the epilogue. I've looked at the transcript of, you know, the final text, you know, portion of the game and stuff. But so where to go with this? So I know a few different things about from previous interviews with Jonathan Blow. He claimed that Mulholland Drive is his favorite movie of all time, which I think is very telling.
Yeah,
not just like, hey, by the way, I like this movie, this is my favorite movie.
It is a great movie
of all time. And the thing with that movie is that it tells the tale of an actor who, I mean, the movie is presented in the form of their fantasy, their retelling of their own life, and it turns out at the end that they're, you know, they're on the verge of suicide. They've been a total failure, but it's just this really weird mix of sometimes, you know, horrific, surreal elements and really just like wide-eyed Hollywood starlet type of scenario. But anyway, but the game, the movie is very cleverly structured.
Yeah.
So when people started saying, well, there's all this stuff later on at the end in the epilogue that in there showing these quotes, and it sounded a whole lot like, you know, like the Manhattan Project and like Oppenheimer, and, you know, had all these allusions that are very clearly, you know, talking about, you know, I become death, destroyer of worlds, and hiding behind, you know, blast, putting welder's goggles on to see an explosion and stuff. And so when I saw that, and there was that post, it's on the RLLMUK, whatever that means, forums, is where that, you know, I think where people first started sort of like looking and seeing someone pointing out that these are in this game, they're like, well, this game is an allegory for, like, it's a metaphor for the making of the atomic bomb. But I was like, well, let's look at it the other way. I mean, what if the real fact of the matter is that that's almost the Rosetta Stone, and that's the reality, that it is a story about someone who made an atomic weapon or something like this, and then everything else you're experiencing is the mental construction, mm-hmm. the retelling of whatever, you know, to make sense of his own history and all these other things, to repress certain things, to rewrite aspects and stuff, and it works that way. And there's a few things that make this seem to work. There's also Mary Shelley Frankenstein references in the game, where specifically the parts about how, you know, Dr. Frankenstein wanted to basically just pull apart the tissue and pierce the inner workings of the world and of life itself, you know. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in that story, Frankenstein has the scientific genius, but he's an ethical and moral midget. He has no concern for the ramifications or no ability to anticipate it. And then, of course, once he does develop the monster, it's out of his hands. It's gone, in the same way that Oppenheimer's security clearance was revoked and, of course, atomic weapons went over to another group of people in the U.S., you know, government. And then there's, like, this other level of, like, connection between those. You know, Mary Shelley Frankenstein's subtitle is A Modern Prometheus, and then Oppenheimer's biography, he's been called an American Prometheus and stuff. Just this notion of someone trying to produce something and being, you know, being punished for it or not getting it. So I was thinking of it, and I'm like, well, could you maybe put together this notion that saying that games are kind of like this, you know? We've got all these complicated physics. We've got, you know, bloom lighting and all these things. But at the end of the day, what are we using it for? Is there any sort of, like, you know, intelligence or morality or just, like, significance to all this, you know? Mm-hmm. And then when you look at it that way, you know, it's also very important for Jonathan Blow to have the gameplay itself correlate to whatever it is, whatever meanings he has in the story. You're like, well, people, you know, physicists and stuff are well known for working in a counterintuitive mode of thought. You know, when people are evolved, we're evolved to understand the world on like a level of animal organisms and objects, things we see and interact with, but not on a molecular level, not on a quantum level for sure, you know. And so when you hear about people like Einstein and stuff working with all these things with time, it's like most of us just can't grasp it. It's beyond mm-hmm. our thinking. But so when you play the game, there's this, like, doubling experience, because it has a very consistent internal logic in the gameplay mechanisms, but it's kind of alien to us when we mm-hmm. play it. And I think when you first solve a puzzle, you do get it. You're like, yeah, of course you're able to force yourself to learn these rules. But if you were to, right then and there, to explain to someone, so I'm like, Robert, what are you doing? Why did you do all those steps?
Yeah.
Why was that exact the order of operations you chose? Maybe at that moment it might be difficult for you to explain. So it's kind of like just this, almost like this, like, sublingual. It's just kind of like I'm saying there's a mode of thought that you could probably, maybe it's defensible to say you're in the mindset playing this game that kind of loosely correlates to someone of a physicist or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is that everyone's got these really emotional responses to the game. And that's, like, the story and stuff. But, like, for me, that's what the whole time I was playing it was like taking an IQ test or something, you know? And I think that could be the point. I mean, this is, according to this reading, that might be the point.
I mean,
which is, again, is why I was mad at it, because it was an IQ test.
I don't think it's an IQ test. I mean, the puzzles really aren't so crazy. But beyond that, to me, like, it's like there's a frustration. Like, I don't, you know, this is like, I don't think the story is something that he even, like, intended people to analyze. Well, obviously he did intend for people to analyze, but not to come up with anything real, you know. And it's like this built-in frustration, because it's a puzzle game where all you have all the answers to all the puzzles except for the one of, like, what the fuck is this game about? Mm-hmm. and the only thing that really comes through for me is this weird like, you know, creeping sense of the world being fucked up. You know, you start out and it's in, like, Super Mario World, mm-hmm. and it just gets more and more fucked up, you know, and the music gets more and more fucked up as it gets mangled by the different time effects, becomes, like, really ugly, even though it's this, you know, nice, like, string quartet and horns and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, it just has this, I do think it's sublingual, but to me it's never going to have any meaning.
The just in terms of the gameplay element, that what this game did to me at the beginning was, and I had to go on a message board to realize I was just so off base, was I realized that my learned language of how to play a game did not prepare me right for how to play this game. Because I went through the first world, which I guess is world two, and I saw the things that seemed completely out of reach. And my natural inclination was to think, just from years and years of game playing, well, I'll be able to come back to this later once I have that ability to do that thing.
Yeah.
That I don't have it yet, you know, so I'm just going to skip it. Clearly, I can't jump that high. Clearly, there's no way to get over there. So this is meant to be – this is like Mario World 12 or
that's,
something.
Yeah, that is standard, know? Like, game.
Right.
And then you get some other power.
Right. So I kept going through the game, and I wasn't getting more powers. You know, I hadn't read anything about the game. I didn't read anything. So I just kept going. I was like – I was just skipping shit because it's like, well, there's no way I could do this yet.
Yeah.
And then as I was continuing to not get more powers, I finally looked at the – I was like, I got to look at the controls. Like, maybe there's going to be a hint in there that there's more controls
coming. It's like a super jump or something.
And then there's nothing. So then I was like, well, wait. I'm just, like, not playing this game right. So then I went up to a couple message boards that basically were saying I was trying to not cheat, and I didn't yet. But basically that were telling me, well, you can beat every puzzle from your first go-through in every screen.
Well, there is in the second world or first world, whatever you want to call it, a thing where you have to pass it. Like the when you come,
well, there is a power
thing.
The ring.
They put you off. No, they put you off the trail at first, because that first level, when you would be thinking that there's a puzzle that you can't solve until you have enough pieces in the area where you pass, and there's a picture frame within.
Oh,
the world,
that one.
You have to have the right pieces.
Oh, you can't.
Yeah,
you can't do that one.
So you do have to pass that one.
Oh, shit.
And that made me think that, too.
Wasted a fucking hour there. I kept jumping off the painting.
You might
God
have the pieces. Okay. You know, but yeah, that I thought that was kind of a funny or mean thing to do, because it's true that for the rest of the game, you really should just, you know, stick in the room that you come to and mm-hmm. find the solution. That's what I did for the entire game. Like, I got really obsessed with it and would just, you know, play around until I found it.
I've been waiting to back it up for a second, because I do think I disagree with you about the way that the game could have meaning or something. Now, first thing I want to say that, like, I do believe it's deliberately ambiguous, and I think that almost all of, like, I mean, I'm not even saying this is a great work of art, but great works of art, especially the kind that, you know, I'm sure, like, that Blow wants to be like, but his own version, you know, they're ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But that ambiguity doesn't mean that anything goes, that anyone, and I see this a lot online, it's like, well, this is what I think it is, this is what I think it is, and there's no need to, like, actually support it with, you know, evidence from the game, you know, or anything. And it's like, I mean, it's, because at that point, then you can just say, like, you know, just take the most serious case of abstract expressionism or something, and, you know, you'll get Jackson Pollock, and you're like, well, this is like Hiroshima, and someone else is like, no, this is like a capillaries, and like, this is a, you know, a heart and all this stuff like this. And at the point, like, if it's everything to everyone, it's like, well, whatever, why this painting than anything else? And so what I think, though, is that, like, I'm pretty convinced he had the number of ideas in mind. It's not like a Rosetta Stone type thing where you break it down to a one-to-one, you've decoded it, where the whole game itself is a puzzle that has a single solution.
Yeah.
But what if it's a puzzle that's got maybe
moments.
3, 4, or 5
No, I agree with that.
Sustainable readings or interpretations on it.
What I mean is, like, I'm never going to think, like, Braid is about this. Because there are moment to moment, you know, there's a moment in the game where it does feel like you're, you know, going after some ex-girlfriend, or you're regretting, you know, some breakup or something. And then there's, you know, moments later in the game, like, I thought at the end of the game, where you come out of this epilogue where you're talking about all this nuclear shit, and you come out of the front door back to the beginning of the screen, and you realize that the city that you thought was like the city at Twilight, mm-hmm. and it was just this really impressionistic version of the city at Twilight, you come out and it looks like the city blowing up.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, like,
I mean, there are, like, moments in the game that mean something, but it's just, like, the idea of, like, piecing it together to be anything in particular. It's not like it's not worth talking about, but those are frustrating me.
Those are they're multiple, like, sort of, you know, what I've been calling illusions that fit that bill, that, like, this is like an atomic experiment type thing, or someone that worked on this kind of thing. And it's not like there's a difference between, say, if there was one illusion to that, then there was another illusion to, like, just any random thing you want, mm-hmm. to, like, Cicero, or to, you know, you just start, like, I mean, they're suggesting a solution, and they're suggesting something. And I think also, I mean, even, you know, like, Jonathan, when, you know, he was talking to Matt Chandernay and stuff, you know, from the One-Up Show. I mean, you could tell he was like, you could tell he was the sort of creator who did have something particular in mind, and he's waiting for the critics or someone in his audience to get what he hopes people will get out of it. Mm-hmm. And he even said as much. He's like, I'm surprised no one's really put this together or said this, you know. Yeah. Like,
he could just tell us.
that would be failure, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to explain.
But so it's just, I mean, it's not like totally, yeah, it's just the difference between, like, I definitely am not of the sort of person that thinks that, like, it's all arbitrary and you can read whatever you want on top of it. If that was the case, what would be the difference between this and, like, say, Super Mario Brothers? We could say, well, Super Mario Brothers, to me, represents, you know, like, man's, like, this or that, and you could concoct whatever thing you wanted, and why would it be any different than Braid, you know?
Yeah.
If there wasn't something there that came together in a more significant way than just people's imagination, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I've enjoyed it a lot, and I would say that it's probably my favorite puzzle game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you mean,
I enjoyed it as a puzzle game more than I enjoyed Portal as a puzzle game. I enjoyed it more than... I enjoy the puzzles in that game more than I enjoy the puzzles in pretty much any, like, adventure game. Yeah.
I'm finding... to me, it's not holding up to a game like Portal so far.
Really?
But it might be my own frustration with not solving the puzzles. But I also, you know, I tend to lean towards wanting humor, and I'm finding this to be a rather joyless experience so far. You know?
Yeah, it's not humorous, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's a little unsettling.
And there are times when the writing is... It's a bit much.
It's overwrought.
Thing. The whole thing's a bit portentous and a little pretentious, I should say, too. Just a little. I mean, even the, you know, when you go to the, did you guys try going to the walkthrough site? Have you been there?
Yeah.
And, you know, he helps you, you know, you get this visual. It looks like you're going to be reading a strategy guide, you know, Prima strategy guide or whatever. And, you know, it's solving the first puzzle or two, which are basically not puzzles, you know, the easy stuff. And then you start getting into the world two, and you're like, okay, here's where we're going to start getting spoilers. And he says, you know, and now, whatever, I forget how he phrased it, but it's like, and now it's time for you to think or whatever. And he basically then goes on to lecture you for a few more lines and screens saying, like, I'm not going to solve these puzzles for you. Like, it's all there. If you just think about it, you'll get it. And I was just like, fuck you, man. Just give me the fucking answers.
Like a crossword puzzle or something when you're taking a flight.
Solve it myself. That's not why I came here. Came here for the answers, because I couldn't solve it myself. Dick. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think he can come off kind of a little snooty in interviews and stuff, but I guess I'd rather have my game designers come off as, like, pretentious artists than, like, car salesmen.
Yeah, well,
you know, like, we listened to what all the fans said, and we made a game that's exactly what you wanted.
Yes, no, like, he's not bottom feeding, that's true, and that's, and it is really interesting. I think it looks cool, too.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic, too, that it's out there and that it is inspiring the sorts of discussions that we're having now and the kinds that you're seeing all over the internet. I mean, it's great for that to be there in a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's been happening. I mean, just in the past few years, it's crazy. I mean, we're starting to see all this stuff. I mean, I mean, it would have been impossible before. I mean, we're watching GamePro TV, like, on YouTube. Did you see that?
I sent those links.
And that was just amazing.
I used
to watch
that when,
like,
I was a kid. I used to, like, rush home from school so I could catch it at 3:30. Yeah.
That's pretty fucking sad, man.
Yeah, I know. There was another one, too. What was it? Video Power. It was another TV show, and it had a sort of cool guy host that would talk about games, and then they had cartoons that were based on, like, Konami franchises.
It was Bigfoot.
Yeah, Bigfoot. And
the Tomato Dude.
The Tomato, yeah, like Quick Tomato or some shit. I don't know.
I played a fucking lot of Konami games. I don't remember no Bigfoot and
Tomato. But I used to get so mad because I wouldn't...
It was like a crane or something.
Bigfoot and Tomato.
I'd get detention for not doing my homework, and then I wouldn't make it home in time for the video game show. Yeah.
Seeing even the games, though, I mean, it showed me how far things have come on that side. But, of course, on the other level, watching that show, I'm like, things haven't come anywhere, because it really reminds me of, like, if you just change the terminology to reflect the decade that the show was produced in, it's really not all that different. A lot of the TV, like, coverage of games nowadays, you know, I mean, it really is, like, this is amazing. They have the review, you know, they have the review thing, and everything is getting a 5, you know, perfect 5, dude! And, like, the guys, that's the whole thing, is that...
And it's all pun-filled, too.
Every
the
single line
is, like... Just but, totally, like, It's the rocket ship to the to space of video game in your face action, like all kinds of like ridiculous,
and like Mondo, and I mean that kind of crap. I mean,
yeah.
When you see the game, remember from that era, the same era of like it was all like Battletoads and you know all those like extreme and in your face mascots. But I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure we said stupid shit back then.
Yeah,
but like I don't remember. I mean, the way that they are, the host, it's basically you'd think okay. These guys are just like the games that they're viewing, and like that the games are like this because everyone's walking around talking like this. They're like, you know, the Bachmeister, the Bach dude's got the most heinous trouble to deal with. it's really like that if you see it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like if you just change some
that
of those
words. That
was
what I aspired to though. I might not have actually talked like that, but I bet I tried to.
What
like,
about?
I definitely aspired to like Bill and Ted. Excellent.
You'd like practice it?
Yeah. No, not practice, but I would definitely use it more than my Texas colleagues.
Yeah.
Yes. But I don't know. It's true that these kinds of games would never have happened before, and it's all this all this downloading stuff is it's what it's all about.
I think it's particularly cool that it happens on a platform like on a console platform.
Yeah.
Like Xbox users through XBLA have access to this stuff, because this would normally be the kind of stuff that would just, you know, only be around for like total nerds on the PC, mm-hmm. that in a you know specific form or, mm-hmm. or another. And the fact that it is in such a populist area where there's a ton of kids, I think is a really neat way for some of the stuff to get out.
Yeah, you know? I'm not going to throw it all though on like downloadables and stuff. I mean, I honestly think that like BioShock and you know and Portal and many other games are.
I mean, the Portal was a downloadable game.
I mean, not for console people, it wasn't.
Yeah, but I mean, like.
Yeah, let's just do a little more special pleading.
Special pleading?
Shit.
What the fuck?
Snap fight here.
No, but I mean, I honestly think it's because it has a great deal to do with the fact that games that could never have sold for $60, like at Best Buy, because they would have ended up, like, in stock for 3 weeks, sold a couple of copies, and, you know, discounted, taken off the shelf forever, mm-hmm. can hang out for a while, develop a long tail. Have you know, they don't always have to be like hits off the bat, and people can invest in these things and you know sell them for $10 or $15, although apparently $15 is
it's too much.
Amazing. I can't fucking believe, like, every time I read a thread about Braid, people are still fighting about this shit.
About the $15.
The $15.
But that was
thing.
Like when Portal came out, it was its length was the version of the Braid price argument.
Yeah. But,
and it was the price too. It was like
it was
the price to length fucking ratio.
I think after you pay $50 for Space Siege, you'll stop complaining about $15 for Braid.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I absolutely understand what you're saying. I think that like the downloadable aspect is producing a whole lot. Like a game like Braid in particular wouldn't exist, but I'm saying I don't think that we owe this trend in creators of games trying to do something more than just make a game where you punch someone in the head 50 times to get to the boss and get to the, you know, and repeat. Like, I don't think we owe that to the downloadable stuff. I think
there's definitely a lot of game developers who've been pushing what a traditional $50-$60 game mm-hmm. is. But now with all this stuff, people are going to, you know, start exploring all these weird territories that were never there before, you know,
right.
The 5-hour game, the 2-hour game. I want to play a 30-minute game. Like, I love short games. I love like this whole thing with the Xbox Live summer stuff right now. Like every release that's coming out, I'm like interested in playing, and it's like, you know, every week I've got something to download and mess around with for a few days and then leave it behind. Like mm-hmm. I don't want to play like a game that's going to take all my time for weeks and weeks. I want to play something I can enjoy and put down.
So Grimm was made for you.
Yeah, although I have not played it.
It's 5 minutes. No game.
Yeah,
that's how long it lasts.
I'm down with that. Yeah, I mean that's what I love about a lot of like PC download stuff that mm-hmm. you get for free is you play with it for a couple hours.
The other thing,
you know,
the other thing that's cool about like all these games, like you're saying, is like that like I don't know, like when you reach the end of the of like you know the Super Nintendo and the Genesis and TurboGrafx, and then you moved over to 3D games, you're like, okay, games have come out like Yoshi's Island and stuff, and you're like, okay, that was it though. The people have exhausted everything that can be done with the 2D games, and now it's kind of like, it just reminds me of like this alternate timeline where instead of like if those immediately everything switched over to 3D. Like, what if, like, the next generation after Super Nintendo was another 2D machine or something, you know? Mm. Probably someone screaming Saturn or whatever, but, like, successfully, you know? And then people continued to deal with it and stuff. I mean, that's, I mean, because that's really what, like, Braid is, right? I mean, imagine, like, you would, it would have been inconceivable back then. But, I mean, imagine if you had played Braid in, like, whatever, you know, like, 1992.
But Sean, Braid is 3D. The third dimension is time.
And even but I mean, like, that would have, like, I mean, that would have just been, like, mind-blowing back then.
Oh yeah, and nobody would have bought it, and it would be,
I bet they would have, dude. If you had a game, a platformer game, even everything else aside, if you had a platformer with fucking the ability to rewind for, like, up to, you know, whole minutes and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, all that's, I think that would have freaked us out. Dude, we got excited at, like, remember some of, like, the Mode 7 shit and the worst case scenarios, like, in Castlevania 4 where, like, the background's spinning and now it looks like a bunch of, like, fucked up, like, artifact JPEGs just, like, getting, like, manipulated all around in Photoshop to make you want to, like, puke. But back then, that was like, whoa!
Yeah.
And I think that's what the GamePro TV guy said.
Whoa! Riding the Mode 7 wave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you wanna come off the serious talk and get into the story of sexual expression in Age of Conan?
Oh my God, this will be like the biggest 180 ever.
Yes, yeah. Do it immediately.
All right. Well, before we came down,
I think I printed
podcast,
two versions.
Yeah, you did.
Of this.
There was a story. One of our readers posted it on our board, and I don't know where the original source was, but apparently. An Age of Conan GM was busted, and apparently so the story goes, was fired because he was caught cybering with a player of the game, and the transcript of said interaction has also made it onto the internet, and we just happen to have a copy of that. And I think we're going to do a dramatic reading.
Okay.
Are we?
No, yeah, no idea how this is going to go because I haven't even read
right,
all
we
of it.
We haven't practiced it. We haven't rehearsed this. This is going to be a little dramatic theater. GFW Radio Theater.
So who's going to be the GM, though, and who's going to be...
I don't know. What do you feel, Mar? Like, what's your motivation?
Who is whose mount?
Yeah,
I could be the GM.
You're going to be the GM? That's okay, fine. So I'm the guy. I guess they bleeped his name out. It's just empty brackets.
Yeah. We get to make up your own name.
We're protecting the children.
Okay, so I don't even know if we're male or female. I think actually that's part of what happens here.
Oh, that's the deal. Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be like,
you can do a text voice.
It's like experimental theater. Let's see. Well, it looks like it starts in the middle of the action here, right? Doesn't it? Because he starts off with dual-wield barbarians, though. I mean, two? That's a bit difficult for me to handle. I'd rather stick with one big sword.
You like it rough, I take it?
Of course. Of course, I'm a fucking rock sniffer. What? I don't know. What does that mean?
Jeff, you're supposed to play the part.
Okay.
Don't critique the script.
All right, I'm still looking for
my... paying you to fucking act.
I'm looking for my motivations. Okay. I'm a fucking rock sniffer.
Keep going.
Oh, it's my line next. Oh, so I was waiting for your line.
No,
with daggers.
There's gonna be some gifts.
And I'm
this.
Specced for second wind. I can go all night.
Wow, wow. I don't think I would ever be the same. Wow, this is turning me on, lol.
Hong says. Who's Hong? I'm all confused by this.
Just story. Keep going.
Hong says he wants in on the hot action. But he's a gold farmer / seller. How do you feel about that? He does have a big bow, a bow. do it like they do on the Discovery Channel? Would you like to RP with me? I see how it is. Not going to talk anymore, sad face. Just got your cyber fix with my pixelated body and left me like all those other guys. Double sad face.
Sorry, getting tells health law. RP, how so?
Well, you know, on those cold windy nights, all I want is to be mounted.
Oh, lol, I see. You're trying to get laid by a GM.
Of course. I thought you were the master, gamer master.
Be gentle.
Are you a real woman? Lol, not crazy question. You would be surprised.
Yep. I just play a male character so guys don't flirt with me in games like on WoW.
Oh, nice.
How about you?
I'm wearing panties.
Unexpected turn of events.
Just go to the turn your screen.
No, that's you.
You'll know it is time to turn the page.
No, you missed a line.
I did that deliberately.
Oh, okay.
You gotta trust me. Okay, let's back it up. Right. The next line was in brackets joke, but I think it detracts from the comedy to reveal that he wasn't actually wearing panties.
Oh,
our listeners would have a better time if they really visualize this guy wearing panties for the rest of this. So it was a deliberate omission.
Okay, all right.
Do you know what kind of panties?
We're going to get to that.
Are they frilly? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, not wearing any. I did see you take them off earlier after all.
I'm going to summon you and a few to take care of your petition, exhibitionist.
Summoning me? How romantic. Where's my summon?
Lol.
You really do love me.
This is the spot, lol.
This is getting pretty hot.
You like this?
Our
head?
Yeah, lol.
I left the boots on. They're hot.
Our lol.
Like, he must be spanking at this point, right?
No. Yeah, because
there's
a lot less typing going on right now.
God.
My panties won't come off, sad face.
Lol, it's odd looking at a guy character, lol, in RL.
Huh? No, in-game.
Your panties won't come off in real life, lol. I'll just have to tear them off and have my way, lol.
Yes! Whip out your massive sword, too!
Raffle! Lol, you like it?
I can't jump on top of it? Sad face?
That could pose a problem. You'll just have to take it until I'm finished with you.
Are you a mighty warrior? Can you slay those meanies that attacked me, sad face? Oh, you do like multiple people in on it, huh?
How old are you? Hopefully not under 18, lol.
I'm 9.
Oh my god!
Want to be my daddy? Remember, I do like role playing.
Oh, that's nice. You're only not 9, are you? I just want to be sure, lol.
Come on, do I sound like I'm 9? What 9-year-old knows about glory holes?
Dude, this is totally sounding like the To Catch a Predator thing.
Oh, God.
You don't, but you never know, lol. You've been a bad girl?
I've never been a good girl.
No, very nice, but you know you'll have to be spanked, right? Take me out and put me in your mouth.
God.
Exclamation point. Not till you spank me with your sword.
You are bad. What if I rip off your panties and poop you hard until I am satisfied?
That sounds perfect. Going to use clobber?
Want to feel you get really wee so I can just put the head of my inside you and use my hand to slowly move it around before plunging into you fully and making you take it all. Uh-oh, climax!
Oh, God.
I think we should have stopped long ago.
Yeah, we probably should have. We're getting into Ziff lawsuit territory here.
You gotta get.
Oh, no. Okay, we have to continue.
No, we have to continue.
Yeah, here's the resolution.
The punchline is coming. Yeah, we're up to the punchline.
You're just as kinky as me. In fact, you're so kinky, you just cybered with a dude. Smiley face. This is Sparta.
There's something wrong with the chronology here, because my next line is, then when you're really hot and eating more, I can reposition.
Right, see, he was still going. The other guy was already saying, yeah, guess what?
Oh,
but this guy was still all worked up here.
Mm.
So he was saying what he was going to do next.
I don't even want to read the next
one.
That's like way pornographic.
Yeah, it gets very pornographic.
I'm really
So then you can see that he's writing that as I'm going, you just hybrid with the dude. This is Sparta. He types all
okay.
that nasty
Oh, yeah.
Shit,
then the response
says,
is, okay, that would really not be good, lol.
Love you. Smiley face. By the way, I've been fapping to this the whole time.
Lol, why did you want this then? Lol, are you gay? Are you serious?
Serious about what?
What's fapping? I'm not up to par on the lingo, lol.
I was joking about the fapping, but I am indeed a dude.
Lol, okay. I'm glad I put my clothes back on, lol.
Yeah, probably a good idea. I have AIDS.
Oh, yeah. Sorry that was rocking.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We didn't really have to do that, did we?
I regret it. I feel dirty now.
I feel dirty.
See, that's like an interaction between form and content. Like, that was a script written so that we feel the shame of the protagonist as we read it.
Yeah, I definitely feel the shame.
It's like a...
Are you looking for a towel?
Oh. I need to. Actually, I'm trying to hide my fucking heart on. I need to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my God. No.
Oh, man.
No.
So, let this be a lesson to you. What can we take away from this whole experience here? First of all, let's never have dramatic readings of Cybering on this podcast ever again. That's one thing to take away.
And also the practical lesson for anyone in the age of Conan is that if you're cybering with a character who is a dude...
Chances are he actually is a dude.
I mean,
not
if you're cybering with
a dude.
If you're cybering with a chick, he's probably a dude. But
right.
Why? I just can't imagine how you talk someone, especially in a game like Age of Conan, where it's all like buff dudes and like right. girls with giant breasts. Like, couldn't you find at least a guy who was willing to play a girl?
Right. Also, you probably don't.
Yeah, on his monitor, he's staring at the text, and then above it, there's like
a
naked dude. But the text, even like the person that was the role that you played, Jeff, wasn't even really saying anything. Like, imagine getting off to that. It was like almost entirely like.
And furthermore, he was at work. I mean, this was his job, was to be in the game, monitoring the game.
Oh, man.
So,
well,
yeah.
It's so sad.
I've never lost a job doing something that stupid. That's true.
He just wanted some place to write. Like, he got tired of Penthouse Letters not publishing a submission, so he just needed some place where he can, like, let the world know what kind of a romancer he is.
I feel bad now.
Yeah, I could take it back to Sirius Land.
Well, we have one other MMO we can talk about very briefly, the Star Trek one.
Let's hear all about it.
I just wanted to tell the tale of because they announced it this weekend. Cryptic Studios, the guys who are making Champions Online, announced it, and I live blogged it.
I heard some people on the Star Trek Online forums weren't.
Yeah,
there's
a pretty long hate thread about Jeff Green on there, because I, you know, these guys asked me to live blog it and I did, and it was very very low hanging fruit, shooting fish in a barrel thing. Like, I'm live blogging a Star Trek webcast, you know, and I really like the Cryptic guys a lot. I'm not a Star Trek fan. I don't have anything against Star Trek. I'm just not a fan. So, you know, I was trying to – I am taking the game seriously, and I'm – especially from an MMO standpoint as an MMO player. But watching this webcast, I was clearly just kind of looking just for, you know, dumbass jokes to tell. I mean, shit.
Well, the whole notion –
I was at home on Sunday.
And that you were live blogging a video webcast.
Right. I mean, that whole part.
That it was a joke.
Right. It was a joke. And so everything I said was just completely, you know – it was just court jester bullshit, you know?
Picking on Star Trek fans is like picking on Scientologists. You do not want to do that, man. They will haunt you for years.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting for the death threats to show up. But, you know, at one point, you know, there's a guy up, you know, I'm watching the webcast, and they get to the question and answer part. And you just know that this stuff's going to be comedy gold with these guys there. Mm-hmm. But they're actually pretty boring, actually. There wasn't a whole lot of comedy fodder. But then one guy gets up there. You know, complete nerdy-looking guy, and he gets up there and he says, "Hi, this is Christopher from Earth," because everybody else has been, you know, Joe from Albuquerque or whatever. So that was his ha-ha line. Mm-hmm. But then he goes on. Then his question is not a question. He starts going off about how,
You know, I just want to know if there's going to be strategy in this game. Like, if I have knowledge of
of you know, military tactics and things like that, that I'm not just going to get owned by little kids, you know, because those of us who watch Star Trek, we tend to be like physicists and scientists, and
he just goes on and on about how smart he and we as Star Trek fans are, and therefore this game better live up to our thing, you know. And so you know, I just sort of mock that a little bit. And then Jack Emmert, the producer, did what he did with all the questions, and he took him very seriously and was respectful, and it was great. Jack Emmert says his piece, and so he's done with the guy. And then the guy, the camera at the webcast goes back on this guy, and he's still standing there, and he says, "Star Trek is in your hands."
Oh man,
it's kind of ominous, you know.
Wow.
So then I wrote that in the live blog. I was like, man, if I was Cryptic, I'd be watching out for this guy. You know? It's like, it's kind of like a threat.
Star Trek is in your hands.
Yeah. So you know, that's just like the nature of what this thing was. And so, sure enough, on this official Star Trek forums, there's like a 3-page thread. Oh, but that's the part I left out when he said, "This is John from Earth" or whatever. I wrote that. I said, oh, this guy just called himself John from Earth. Way to go, nerd. That's what I typed. Okay? So that's one of the things people took offense to and went on about in their posts. Like, who does this guy think he is at a gaming forum calling us nerds? Like, what does he think he is?
Well, this
Star Trek fans are surprised that they're being made fun of?
But it's like... Yeah, but I'm a nerd. What do you think? I'm watching it. What do you think I'm doing here? I am a nerd.
Know, though, that there's a hierarchy. Like, I mean, certainly video game fans are nerds,
right,
but not nearly as much as a Star Trek fan would be. See, video game nerds, they get married.
Right.
They have lives. And Star Trek fans are married to the Enterprise. And I have people in my family and friends Star Trek fans. Yeah. I have friends who have constructed their own uniforms and phasers, okay? I know these people.
Uh-huh. There were people in
uniforms. Did they synthesize dilithium yet?
No, but they've tried. I grew up on Star Trek because my mom is a mega, mega, mega Star Trek fan, and I got to say, I fucking hate it.
Does she consider herself a Trekkie or a Trekker?
She's a Trekker. And that's what we watched most growing up, although I did have to suffer through all the 60s shit, too.
Okay, so this is partially, though, some of your own, you know, like, mother issues that you're working out.
Yeah, definitely.
This isn't just you being Star Trek.
And just being, like,
forced. We always talk about Star Trek on here. It seems to come up a lot.
It does?
It's come up quite a bit. I brought it up a few times. I think it's cool. I'm not...
You like Star Trek?
Like, I respect Trekkies. Ever
Maybe
since, like, I watched the documentary,
blog.
And I watched, like, Star Trek The Next Generation and stuff. Like, it's cool.
I've got nothing against
Star Trek.
This is the problem,
fans.
Though.
I don't.
Online, in any, whatever the format is, you can't expect everyone
to
have read this, to have, like,
of course
listened
not.
To our podcast,
right.
to know that you constantly make fun of yourself for being a nerd.
Right.
And, I mean, I get myself into trouble all the time on this shit. I'll post something on a forum or something, and it's just totally misinterpreted.
Right.
And I always look, and I'm like, either I'm just a shitty communicator, might be that, but there's also, like, I'm fucking up because I'm assuming that people are aware of all of my positions and my attitudes
because
I've expressed them elsewhere, and, like, you can't. And so, yeah, these people get it, and they get it as part of the nerd posse where, you know, you look around for something to be outraged on. About online every day.
Sure.
And so it makes its way back to them. And then that's the thing.
Look what he said about us.
Yeah. And so then there's the fucking outrage. And
right.
Then they all just go on it.
I mean, even
as
I was doing
they probably forgot all about it by now.
No, even as I was doing the live blog, I was thinking, oh, yeah, there's going to be some nerd rage over this. And there was. And when I saw the thread, I was laughing as I read it. The only part that bummed me out was that eventually the thread gets locked. And
did you try to log in, cop to it? Did you try to make an account?
Did not.
Did you consider it?
Yes, I did. But I didn't.
Yeah. I was
it was locked,
when
so
I couldn't. When you linked me to the thread,
I
went to go to make an account because I was going to put this, like, really fucked up story about how, like, I was totally offended. And, like,
you were gonna grief
some people
me.
Could call me a nerd, and I was going to say, like, you know, whatever. I'm so and so many pounds, and I'm really disappointed because I got a fleshlight, but I couldn't even get far enough into it to hit to the ribbing. But I'm not a nerd. I am a nerd, but I don't need this guy telling me I'm a nerd, and I'm making that part up right now, but I was going to come up with something sad, not as sad as that, but
assuming
something
that I
sad.
Would respond to it, you were going to grief me.
Well, not for you, just for everyone else to okay. be like, yeah, man, like, this is why you don't go around saying this kind of shit. Like, look at, like, Corky here or whatever I call myself, you know? Like, you gotta fucking think before you start live blogging webcast.
Yeah, so when the last message is from a GM who says, like, you know, this, you know, he was entitled to his opinion, meaning me or whatever, but we're locking this thread because, you know, this isn't the place for negative comments about our game or whatever. It was along those lines, and I was like, really? You know, like, I don't know. I didn't feel like that. I would have been happy with them leaving it open and bashing me more.
You have to know, though, I've seen you get genuinely pissed off when people have posted things on our forums like the infamous Wabe Walker. And you've been like, before we figured out it was Wabe, last time you're like, dude, I want to ban this guy. I'm like, don't ban him. And I'm like, why? Because he, I mean, like, maybe we disagree with him. He's an asshole. But I'm like, we just look like pussies if we ban someone for, like, disagreeing.
Well,
or
you're
for
right.
Not
but
liking
but,
us,
but
you
it's different because that's our forums.
Yeah.
Here I felt like.
That was the official Star Trek game forum.
Yeah, I didn't want to, like, go in there and ban
Do you know how much satisfaction you just gave that guy by saying his name on the podcast?
The Wabe Walker. He always comes back.
Oh,
what was funny
we
is when he
that
did
out.
That most recent time. No, I don't care. He's kind of like, he's just a staple. He's like a force to be, like, you can, he's like herpes, you know, you can deal with him. You can fucking manage him, but you can't get rid of him.
Yeah. Not really a serious STD anymore. Wait,
but yeah, like, when I first started seeing those posts, remember I aimed you, I'm like, something's up with this dude. And
yeah,
I'm like,
you did.
I did
you
an
did.
IP
you
check
it.
To see, and I tried to match him to the Wabe Walker account, and it didn't match. So I was like, but then other people, like, persisted with it, and clearly he just had, like, a dynamic IP.
He was very cleverly getting my goat in that particular thread.
Oh, yeah, he was totally getting you.
Yeah.
He was Wabe walking all over you.
Yeah, he was. I wasn't annoyed in the Star Trek thing. I really wasn't in that thread. I mean, I wasn't, like, upset.
Yeah.
You know.
You could have. It would have been cool. Like, I don't know if you could have just registered and been like, hey, guys, like, I apologize because you have no context, but, like, trust me, like, I play Ticket to Ride, and tonight I'm going to go home to do this, and I do a podcast about my World of Warcraft character.
Right, I mean, like, this is essentially like, what I was going
to be
do.
Honest, Star
say,
Trek's probably a lot cooler than that, so.
Well, right, that's essentially what I was going to do, is like, I was just having fun, you know?
Yeah.
I'm one of you guys. This is just a goof, you know? So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying
And
that.
How could you possibly entertainingly live blog a Star Trek MMO announcement without at least making some nerd jokes? Look, I mean, if you're just going to play it straight, it would have been
And also,
like,
if you go and read
the thing,
there's plenty of times where I was like saying, this sounds cool. I mean, they were cherry-picking the hate. And furthermore, you know, they were kind of like nerd were Star Trek geek comments made throughout the thing, you know. Even Leonard Nimoy was sort of poking fun at the whole thing at the beginning. I mean, if you can't participate in something like this without a sense of humor, you know, geez.
Yeah.
you got some problems. I mean, if you're an adult and you think that this – And it's cool to have these hobbies. We all do. That's what I'm doing here today.
Did they show much about the game itself or just announce?
Well, they
existence?
Talked about it. Jack Emmer talked about it a lot. And they had a brief trailer, but the trailer didn't show a whole lot. But he went on in detail just verbally about concepts in the game, which sounded pretty good. So,
does it get, I mean, like, how do you grind in Star Trek without bringing
you
up
gotta
the,
kill
Penny
Tribbles.
Arcade, the Penny Arcade comic of the day?
You got to go out and collect 30 Tribbles. And then
that's probably going to be it, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know. They talked about, you know, there's going to be planetary exploration. There's going to be ship-to-ship combat. Or so, you know,
is there going to be alien on alien sex?
Only between the GMs and
okay.
other dudes.
Nice.
So anyway, the announcement itself was. It is kind of amazing that this thing is still alive because this has been one of those endlessly, like, borked projects. So, you know, originally this was in the hands of Perpetual, the now-defunct Perpetual. The not-so-perpetual Perpetual are out of business, and the license was picked up by Cryptic here. So, but Perpetual had it for a while. So here's my question about – and you're maybe a little closer to Star Trek than I am.
Yeah, would Robert's mom play it?
Because Robert's mom played it. Is it like – it's just – like, I wonder about
would
this.
Would she play the game?
I don't know.
She doesn't – she plays Zuma or whatever.
Zuma.
But is the franchise still as alive and well as – you know, as ever?
I don't know. I mean, I think
is the new movie going to rev up all that again?
I think the fan base is, like, is sort of self-perpetuating, and it doesn't need any like cultural popularity in the present for it to sort of continue, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think that it's anywhere near at the level that it was when, you know, you had like Next Generation and Voyager and all these like various offshoots popping up before they grounded right. into the ground.
Look how long it was between the original series and Next Generation.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they had movies and stuff.
It just strikes me as like less of a mainstream product than maybe they're thinking it is. Like,
I don't know at this point.
But the people that they could get are exactly the kind who would be willing to pay a monthly fee over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Star Trek is a mainstream thing, but I don't know what is. Like American Idol, I don't know. It's a niche thing with like a lot of fans, which is basically all anybody wants anymore.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a period when they were grinding out the movies, though, with the original cast, where it was, I think, a lot more in the public eye.
Right.
Right.
Although, I don't know if, like, the Next Generation movies were nearly as big.
Consider worldwide, too. There's, like, a worldwide Star Trek fan base. Trekkers.
Yeah. Ryan, are you going to play Star Trek Online?
I might try it. I'm not a Star Trek fan at all, but I'm interested in... seeing if they can make a good sci-fi MMO.
Certainly there have got to be Trekkies or Trekkers at 1UP. There have got to be. I mean, just odds are.
There have to be. Maybe even Chuff, because Anthony was upset about the whole, like, Yaddle lactate stuff.
Oh, was he? Was he really mad at us?
Because it wasn't lore. He's like, there's no evidence for that. Like, he was seriously, like, disappointed in us.
Was he really? Oh, is that why he's not here today? Because he's sad?
He's
Star Trek people and Star Wars people don't get along because Star Trek people think Star Wars people are idiots.
There's a lot of overlap between the two.
I think
they've come to grips with it. I think they've gotten to the point where
they had an armistice.
There's only so much Star Wars and there's only so much Star Trek, and like, what do we do when the shit's not coming out? We go to the other. Like, we might as well love it all.
So they probably had some big meeting and some big call, sort of like a West Side Story. They were on either side of the camp, and then one person took one step forward, and eventually they hugged. Star Wars people.
One year they had dueling conventions at the Hyatt Regency, and there was this big showdown in the lobby, and they were going to fight.
Tasers versus lightsabers.
A Klingon cosplayer like start hooking up with the Yaddle cosplayer.
But the Vulcan contingent came out and talked some reason into people, and were able to make them see that war has no logical basis for existing, and so they came to a truce. I'm sorry that I continue to create this stupid lore. Jesus.
We're all sitting here sort of like going, yeah, that sounds cool.
They did. Have like a lot of Trekkies and Trekkers. Sorry, I keep saying it like that. That's from Trekkies, the movie.
Yeah. Did you ever see the second Trekkies movie?
It's not as good as
the first. It's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
There was a sequel. But
yeah.
Don't even bother. The only good thing about the sequel is that you get to find out more about the one kid who's just like, indubitably, the stitching needs to be released by 1/16th of an inch. Otherwise, a pretty knockout job, I would say. Like, you find out that guy gets married and...
Yeah, he kind of mellows.
See more about him.
Yeah.
But there's the one woman who she started off selling armor in a convention, some sort of like Gen Con type scenario. I was like, originally we were selling armor and we got some Trek cards, and then eventually we had more Trek cards than armor, and next thing you know, I'm a Trekkie, not a Trekker, or something like that.
that's a big transition for Trek fans. From
something
punk to goth or something. Like, your friends will disown you.
So is it like a conscious thing you say? I'm no longer a Trekkie, I'm a Trekker. What's the difference?
The Trekkers are are legit. They had, you know, it was so sad. The explanation that they had in there was just like, I'm not a fan. Like, they're trying to say that they're not fans, but that they're almost like, they I don't know, man. It was just some half-ass shit. It was just like the same people that had the talk show, and they're like, we had to debate whether it was going to be called Trek Talk or Talk Trek. And ultimately, we decided that it was going to be called Trek Talk because we were talking about Star Trek. We're not talking about Trek.
Difference between Trekkie and Trekker was Next Generation and Classic. I thought Trekkers were Next Generation and Trekkies were old school.
You need to borrow the DVD, son, because there's no agreement.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's some
of
people. I think there's some people that think that. There's like the old school ones call themselves Trekkies.
Yeah.
But then there are some that were, there's a guy dressed up as Captain Kirk and he was calling himself a Trekker because.
Do they like fight the two sides? Like,
no.
There's no internal squabbling amongst these Star Trek fans about, you know,
the Trekkies are cooler than the Trekkers kind of thing, or we were here first, or
so we don't know what the difference is.
There probably is, just like the fight between casual and hardcore, hardcore and casual gamers.
Or Xbox.
Ryan is
PS3,
frustrated, dude. He wants to know what's the difference.
I kind of want to know the difference too.
Yeah. What?
I gave my theory. I don't know. Wikipedia?
I don't know.
All right. That's something to post on the boards there. Tell us the difference between Trekkie and Trekker.
I wish that you could just call upon Wikipedia.
Is there a distinction between like the people who just like watch the show and think it's cool and the people who dress up like
Klingons?
Skip
looking it up here.
We will read it.
Do you guys want a quick review of a comic? I brought this in because Anthony had read it as well, and I thought we were going to review it together.
Can you start off by describing the quality of this man's mustache?
Oh, look, Mark Miller wrote it. It sucks.
Wow.
There's my review.
I don't think we need to go any further than that. I think Ryan totally owned that review.
You got to see Sean's face.
I'm actually not bummed. I do think it sucks.
Oh, you do?
Well, there you go. Okay.
The comic is called War Heroes. It's issue 1 of 6. Coming out. Mark Miller is the guy who wrote Ultimates I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. Like, he's done some good stuff. And the artist on this, Tony Harris, does the illustrations for another series called Ex Machina that I read. Generally pretty good. The artist has got a problem, though, in that like every like thing he draws, the source material is a photograph of a person.
Okay.
So I'm just going to talk to you, Jeff, while Ryan and...
Well, they're reading a laptop here.
About Trekkies
and
Trekkers.
It must be the Trekkie Trekker.
Can we say...
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, do that, and then we'll get back to
the Wikipedia entry for Trekkie versus Trekker.
Excellent.
Some Star Trek enthusiasts prefer the term Trekkie, while some others self-identify as Trekker. Self-identification as a Trekkie became even less popular after a famous national television parody in 1986. See parodies below. Several self-described Trekkers were quoted as saying they had a life, contrasting themselves from Trekkies. Okay, so Trekkers are Trekkies who don't wear their uniform to bed?
They were, well, some of the self-identifying Trekkers were those that were wearing, like the woman who wore her uniform. I'll wear my uniform. She wore her Star Trek uniform and phaser to the Clinton trial.
In the documentary, Trekkies, Kate Mulgrew stated that Trekkers are the ones walking with us, while the Trekkies are the ones content to simply sit and watch Star Trek.
Oh, dear.
There we go. Yeah, that's what I was getting hung up on, this walking with shit.
Oh, dear.
Thank you, Scott.
There are those who, Trekkies are just passive and watching. Well, the Trekkers will walk along beside us.
Where?
To the fucking convention,
walk with these actors who are pretending to play these roles in this fictional universe?
Yeah, I don't...
Well, I remember my first convention.
Wow, that's scary. Well,
some people just
Wikipedia.
Really wish that Star Trek was a place that you could go and live, you know?
You can in Star Trek Online soon enough.
Yeah. So,
Tell us about Mark Miller's latest lame book.
Back to the comic book.
Yes.
Fucking Ryan.
So what's with this mustache? There's a guy on the cover pointing a gun at me, and he has a really ridiculous handlebar mustache.
Here's the deal with War Heroes. It's like a near future. Here's like the quick version of what's wrong with this book.
Yeah.
It's a near future take on basically what's happening with America and its war on terror. But imagine, though, if it was written by someone whose foreign policy went no further than Fox News. I mean, the entirety of his awareness of, like, world events was delivered via Fox News. And then you tried to write a near-future thriller on world affairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the problem, right? So America gets nuked with the dirty bomb. Then it gets hit again. Then there's, like, all these biological, like, weapons events in parts of the country. And so America decides that we need to invade Iran because of this. But this time, here's the problem, is that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were siding with Iran, and that's when all the shit started popping off. I mean, there's one problem, right? You've got two, like, very, very antagonistic branches of Islam getting together. But then here's where it gets really dumb, is that, like, millions of Americans flee across the border to Canada, and no one wants to fight, and they somehow can't manage to institute a draft to get enough people to fight this invasion in Iran. So what they got something better in mind. They make some pills that make you super strong, or make you run really fast, or make you fly, and then they use these pills so that way they need fewer soldiers, and then they can attract recruits this way. Like, you can be a superhero, and they'll heal. Like, if you're in a wheelchair, if you're like paraplegic or something, you take these super pills and you're fucking ready to roll. You're a soldier.
It's just the same shit as always.
Yeah, okay, it's crap. So they have to create and superheroes to battle the bad guys.
Also,
yeah.
Isn't that actually
for 50 years?
Isn't that actually what the U.S. military strategy is? I mean, not the super pills, but having all the technology and fancy stuff to make a smaller force more effective. I mean,
it is, and it's like it's the situation that it's the way it's told and like everything else I explained. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and there's that there. I mean, like I just posted a story on my Twitter today about people.
On your Twitter.
I had to pause on that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. You've become that guy, Sean.
Oh shit!
Have you read my Twitter today?
Well, I basically passed a large stool, and I wanted you to know.
I took a picture with my iPhone.
It's not like that. It wasn't like that, man. It was about basically.
Right. You were ironically posting.
It wasn't ironic. Fuck you. I didn't do shit. I'm deleting the account. That's it, and that's all. All right. That's about it.
No, what was the story about that you posted?
Oh, using advances in neuroscience to just translate into more effective war fighting, dealing with interrogations and lie detection. It was equivalent to truth serums, just suppressing. Fear and all these sorts of things, being able to control UAVs with your mind, with a sort of just a mental interface.
You know, Metal Gear Solid had some really interesting ideas on that.
It did. So did you Twitter about it?
Yeah, Twitter about it, Robert.
Yeah, I need
I think, to. I think what the U.S. really needs is not the superheroes. It just needs the East German female Olympiads, you know, from the 70s and the 60s.
They
were
ripped.
Did you read that recently?
They broke that dude's arm. If they arm wrestled that one guy who I put the video up of, the weightlifter.
Oh, the weightlifter, yeah.
They could probably take him in an arm wrestle.
Yeah, there was a story about this. It was in the paper the other day about this East German woman who was fed so many steroids unknowingly.
Her boobs turned into dicks.
She ended up.
I'm sorry.
I'm sad.
I'm not even finishing the story.
No, I read about that.
That's a better story.
They fed her so many.
That's
steroids.
What happens.
They fed them to her.
That she became a man.
She became a man. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I saw the before and after pictures on
that.
Yeah.
She didn't notice, though.
Well, I think she noticed.
I think she noticed.
Anyway, your story's better. I think that's the one we're going with.
Although, technically, in the after pictures, you couldn't see what was under her shirt, so it's possible. Yeah.
She looked like a man in the before picture.
To be honest, she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
Aerosmith wrote a song about her even prior to all this force feeding.
Wouldn't that be "Lady Looks Like a Dude"? Not "Dude Looks Like a Lady."
You got me again.
Good point.
Curses!
Curse you, Bobito.
Are we done, Skip? Are we?
We're at our time.
Probably he's nodding.
That's what I'm hearing.
All right,
Ryan, do you have anything to add?
No, I think
nothing.
Sean kind of. Did it as well as it could be. I have nothing to add to that.
What about that comic?
No.
Oh, about the...
Did you read the comic?
No. I flipped through it.
Jesus, you can't take the time to read a comic. I could read this in 2 minutes, man. Like, there's literally like 500 words to read. Maybe. Oh, my God. This thing looks... Yeah. We're going to sit here and read a comic.
No, we're not.
Yeah, okay, so we're leaving. We'll see you next week, I'm sure. Yeah, with lots more. Oh, including some Space Siege analysis, which I was going to do with Anthony, but he's not here today.
So we should give like teasers for stuff this week because we got a lot of crap coming out. I mean, I think Monday we're going to be able to have a lot of stuff about the Command & Conquer Red Alert 3.
Right,
we got hands-on and stuff about some things that haven't been discussed about the game that'll be exclusive. There's an EA event tomorrow.
Yep.
And I'm going to be playing Crisis Warhead multiplayer. Expect to be able to talk about that next week.
Yep.
Looking at a number of other games there. Bobito just went on a boat cruise to see Godfather 2.
He gets all the
yesterday.
Cool assignments.
No, no one wanted to go. And
nobody wanted to go. Nobody wanted to go, and I didn't know anybody on that fucking boat, man. It was amazing. I've never been to a game event where I walked in the door and didn't know a single person.
Yeah,
it was
actually,
so awkward.
Boat events are the worst because you can't fucking get off. You're stuck till they go back to... Yeah.
That's why no one else went.
That's why we didn't go, yeah.
So quit trying to make it like
You're
Robert's
right.
eating up all the gravy that you just don't want. to eat.
And Sean totally bailed because the other night I was supposed to meet him for drinks, and I'm on my way over. And he's like, hey, are you, we're going to leave. And I'm like, I'm outside the restaurant. And he's like, yeah, we're going home. I'll make it up to you. I'll go to this event with you tomorrow. And then I showed up and Sean's like, I'm tired.
Dude, we got to like, fun. Okay, now we need like his and hers version.
Oh, boy.
Now that she's had her say.
Here we are in council.
Yeah.
Well, we were supposed to go to have like to go have drinks, but I was like, you know, going to get dinner and stuff.
Yeah.
And but you were like, you were late on that because you were making dinner because you had to have dinner with your wife.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, my refrigerator's empty and shit right now, and I was starving. So Anthony, we were like, we got to go and eat. We're starving. So we get there and we were there for a while, and then like, I have to be honest, it was greasy shit, and I think both of us felt in like an imminent movement. And so I didn't want to sit in that place for another hour, you know, half hour for you to get there, and then however much longer while you ordered, while I was like in danger of shitting my pants. So I called you and said, hey, man, you got to turn around. And then the next day, and then I felt, I did feel guilty about it. So I was like, you know what, man, like I'm going to go on that boat with you. But then the next day came, and I was like, I ain't gonna go on that fucking boat.
You fucker.
Yeah, so we, but that story's gonna go up.
Yeah.
Right? And then Spore, we're gonna launch a big Spore thing, counting down to the game's release next month.
You know, some contests. And...
Right. And also, we have a very big interview coming up. I don't wanna say yet. But
oh, yes.
Very big interview with
This week, probably.
This week, probably. That's why I don't want to say yet. Mm-hmm. But from somebody big in the PC community who we have needed to hear from for a while, and he spoke to me.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk to him. Look for that. I'm sorry to be a clown
too.
About having to spoil. I mean, to tease that way, but I just kind of do.
Right. You can't even say no,
hey,
though?
You can't
confirm that?
Will you tell me after the show's
no
over?
No hints.
I kind of don't want to, only just in case there's some 11th hour backfire.
Right. We want to get this. We want to press publish before we.
Yes,
I
exactly.
Yeah.
So just to make sure that it actually goes through and there's no other complications. So just watch for it.
Right. Cool.
Oh, dude, so much stuff. We just got a playable copy of the Stalker Clear Sky in, too.
Aha.
So shit.
Maybe if you want to cover that, because I'm going to be writing something on Crisis Warhead this weekend.
Yeah.
So if I don't want to.
I'd be down.
Okay, cool. Well, after this,
you just heard some editorial planning.
Yeah.
Live editorial planning.
That's how it works.
That's how we work.
Bobby,
whoa, that was loud, dude.
Sorry, I shoved the mic down my throat.
Okay. Okay. So be sure to check in on oneup.com throughout the week for all your PC gaming coverage. And we'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.